content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum, and maybe from the Quote Garden website. And we'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. I am following nature. Without being able to grasp her, I perhaps owe having become a painter to flowers. That was said by Claude Monet. New Gardener Advice and Suggestions by Melody Rose. Are you thinking about starting a garden this spring? New gardeners often face challenges they are not prepared for. First-time garden tips. Spring's approaching, and the gardening bug bites many people who have never picked up a spade. More often than not, new gardeners choose plants and techniques that are beyond their capabilities. This results in failures and heartache. And the budding gardener gives up and decides they aren't cut out for this activity. With a little careful planning and plant choices, anyone can have a successful garden. The biggest problem new gardeners face is trying to do too much. It is much better to begin your gardening journey on a smaller scale than you are capable of managing. Decide whether you want to grow decorative plants or edibles, and only choose plants that are easy care. As your skills improve, you can add more challenges. Containers or in-ground gardens. The first thing a new gardener must decide is if they are going to have an in-ground garden or a container garden. If planting in the ground, prepare the soil long before it's time to plant anything. Choose a spot where there's at least 8 hours of full sun and where any rainwater drains away rather than stands. Remove the grass and turn the soil over about a foot deep. Work in a layer of compost and add topsoil if the spot seems too low. It is better to have your garden bed raised a few inches above the surrounding area. Excess rainwater will drain away, and I've also found it is easier to keep weeds at bay. Don't get too enthusiastic about the size of this new garden. Smaller is better for first-time gardeners. An area 10 feet square is as big as I would recommend, and smaller than that is even better. You'll be surprised at the variety that can grow in such a small space. Container garden suggestions. If choosing a container garden, be sure the containers are deep enough for the plants you want. One of the biggest mistakes a new gardener makes is selecting containers that are too small. Yes, tiny transplants look forlorn and lonely at first, but take into consideration the ultimate mature size of the plant. You want to give the roots plenty of room to grow, and small containers require frequent watering. I have raised planters at my back door that grow a surprising amount of flowers and herbs. They stand waist high and are easy to work with. The western red cedar resists rot, and they are deep enough for a huge variety of plants. If you have mobility problems and bending over is an issue, you might consider this type of option. Vegetable garden advice. If choosing edibles, select easy care vegetables and make sure you give them enough space when planting them in the ground. Again, tiny transplants look silly at first, but that 6-inch tomato plant will grow into a monster by the season's end. In a 10-foot square space, a new gardener can plant 4 to 6 tomato plants, 6 pepper plants, a couple of eggplants, 3 or 4 bush squash plants, and maybe a melon or two. Easy vegetables for first-time gardeners. When choosing tomatoes, remember that there are 2 different types, determinate and indeterminate. Determinate tomato plants are usually shorter plants, and they produce their fruits so that they all ripen within a week or two. Gardeners usually choose them if their summers are short. Indeterminate tomatoes continue to grow all season, with many plants topping out over 6 feet tall. There are fewer tomatoes ripening all at once. However, they produce all season long. Give indeterminate tomatoes strong support and big tomato cages. The normal tomato cages that big box stores sell are nowhere near tall enough. I like to grow my tomatoes on fence panels. They are 5 feet tall, and it is easy to bind up wayward branches. Tomatoes also benefit from a good mulch. I lay down several layers of newspaper and spread straw over that. This keeps moisture in the soil and also keeps the foliage off the ground. Peppers need to be planted a couple of feet apart. There is an old saying that pepper plants like to hold hands, and I've found that they do better when planted close together like that. Just remember that if you are planting both hot and sweet peppers, to place them at opposite ends of the garden. If cross-pollinated, the seeds of your sweet peppers can be hot. Peppers, eggplants, and tomatoes are all cousins in the Solanaceae family. However, it is impossible for them to cross-pollinate with each other, so all you have to worry about are hot and sweet peppers. Peppers do not usually require any additional support. Treat eggplants as you would peppers. However, space them about 3 feet apart and give them a bit of support. Small tomato cages work well for eggplants. Tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants are also happy in containers. Make sure that you give your tomatoes and eggplants at least a 5-gallon container. Peppers do well in half that size. Easy care annual flower varieties. If you want a decorative garden in the ground, decide whether you want annuals or perennials. Annuals mature, set seed, and die all in one season. Perennials may die back to the ground each winter, however, they sprout again in the spring. Good choices for annuals in a 10-foot square area are marigolds, zinnias, celosia, cosmos, petunias, and sunflowers. Most of these plants have a number of choices in color and size. Place the tallest ones to the back of the bed and the shorter trailing plants to the front. Again, as with the vegetables, these small transplants will look lonely at first, and you will be tempted to plant them closer together. Just remember that the mature plant will be much taller than these babies. Annual plants also benefit from pinching back the growing tips a few times during the season. If you pinch the new growth out of each stem, the plant produces side shoots, and instead of a tall, slender plant, you have a shorter, bushier one. This may set your bloom time back by a couple of weeks, but your garden will look much more professional if you do this. Deadheading is also something that annuals will benefit from. As soon as the flowers fade, clip them or pinch them. If you remove the faded flowers, it tricks the plant into producing more flowers. An annual plant thinks it is done when it sets seed, so preventing it from reaching that point prompts it to continue blooming. Easy care perennial flower varieties. Perennial plants come back from their roots each spring, and easy choices for sunny areas are salvias, daylilies, asters, iris, daisies, and ornamental grasses. Unlike annuals that bloom all season, perennials have a specific few weeks window bloom time, so the best way to grow perennials is to choose plants that have different bloom times, or mix annuals and perennials in the same bed to have something blooming at all times. Iris bloom in the spring, daylilies usually bloom in early summer, and daisies bloom in summer. Salvias generally bloom in midsummer, asters in late summer and autumn. All of these like full sun and well-drained soil. Most perennials do best in the ground, and the new gardener should probably avoid containers for perennials until they have mastered a few gardening skills. Seek advice from experts. No matter what plants and methods a new gardener chooses, they should start small. Master the skills needed to maintain a small garden, and a larger one shouldn't be overwhelming. Keep a few containers or a small in-ground garden the first season. Smaller is better. Seek wisdom from experienced gardeners. Our discussion forums here at DG have many experienced gardeners who can help. Learn how to contact your county extension service. Each county in the U.S. has an office maintained by their state agricultural college, and it is a wealth of information on the specific gardening needs of your area. They can assist with soil tests, advise you on pest and disease treatments, and suggest specific plants that are proven successful where you live. They also have classes and information on preserving the harvest by canning and freezing, and assist new gardeners in the safest methods for putting by produce. Most of all, do not overdo it. A new gardener has no business with an acre vegetable garden. Keep records of what was successful, a flop, and the weather during the season. Your notes will help you next year. Learn how a garden grows and progresses through a season before tackling a large project. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, this article is by Helen Yost, Starting Plants from Seed. For a gardener ready to jumpstart spring, there's nothing more enjoyable than growing plants from seed. The light levels have increased, and the outdoor temperatures are rising. Yet spring, March 21st, is not the operative date for planting outdoors, but it is perfect for starting seeds indoors. We still have weeks to wait before it's safe to do our spring planting. In our area, the safe date for outdoor planting is on or around April 15, but always pay attention to your local weather. What to do with all those seeds? Do you ever wonder what to do with 50 seeds in a small package when you only want to grow 5 plants? Seed viability diminishes each year, so saving is possible but not always reliable. Instead, share the extra seed with friends through a propagation party. This type of party works best with other like-minded gardeners. For example, if you want to grow tomatoes and have a few friends that also compete or enjoy rocking the best tomatoes on the block, here begins your invitee list. As a wildlife gardener, I'll be hosting a propagation party in March with the members of the Be Better Forum. The best part is selecting the plants I believe each member would want to grow in their garden. This year's propagation is for host butterfly plants. Attendees can also bring seeds to share with others if they want. Materials needed. Seed sowing basics are well documented with several approaches. For the forum, we're using plug trays. I find these trays are the easiest for those with little time and experience. This approach is almost foolproof. The trays, potting mix, and labels can be purchased at a local garden center carrying propagation supplies. One landscape plug tray. Each tray holds 32 plugs, each 4 inches deep by 2 1/4 inches square. Seed starting medium. For one tray, I use about a 12-quart bag of a seed starting mix. Labels. A label for each seed type. For our example, we used 5 labels because we are growing 5 different varieties. Hands-on experience teaches gardeners by trial and error, so if this is your first time, having others join in to share their knowledge is helpful. Step by step, not to oversimplify it, but it is just poking seed in the medium. Mix the peat-rich seed starting mix with water to absorb water before planting. Take a handful and squeeze. If water comes out, the mix is too wet, so add more medium. If the ball does not hold its shape, it's too dry, so add more water. The lighting. Good multi-directional light is essential. Once a seedling emerges, the seedlings will stretch and be leggy without sufficient light. Instead of proper lighting, a warming pad will work. The growing. Keep indoors until after the last frost. On or around April the 15th. Water when the top of the soil is dry to the touch. Even after frost, you'll want to put the plug tray in a protected area outside so they can harden off. Once the weather looks promising, meaning when the soil is 60 degrees Fahrenheit or higher, the plugs can be planted outdoors. Testing seed viability. Dampen 3 to 4 sheets of paper towels, making sure they are evenly moist. Place 10 test seeds on the moistened towels, making sure they are not touching. Fold over like an envelope and place in a Ziploc bag and close partially. You want the seeds to breathe. Place in a warm spot between 65 to 80 degrees for about 7 to 10 days. Depending on the type of seeds, germination will be in 2 to 14 days, but it is okay to check their progress. If 8 out of 10 seeds germinate, that is an 80% germination rate. For the most accurate information, check the back of the seed package for germination days, but it is generally 7 to 10 days. And some garden events coming up. Spring has sprung, March 16th, 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Join us in celebrating the start of spring with interactive displays and hands-on activities, a recycling art activity, tips from master gardeners, garden tours, and more, free for all ages, at the Borden Building and Grounds Fletcher Park in Raleigh. Call 919-996-4364. 919-996-4364 for more information. And the Durham Garden Forum, new plant picks, March 19th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Learn about new selections for your garden with Jason Holmes of Duke Gardens. There is a fee and you need to pre-register, and it happens at Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707 for more information. And the Layered Garden, March the 21st, 2 p.m. Sponsored by the North Carolina Unit of the Herb Society of America. There is a fee. To register, email carlila1st@gmail.com. This happens at Paul J. Senior Botanical Garden, located in Kernersville. And Garden Lust, a botanical tour of the world's best new gardens, March the 21st, 7 to 9 p.m. For 3 years, Chris Woods traveled the world seeking out contemporary gardens and found 50 of the best. With wit and humor, he describes the most enviable details of lavish private estates and gem-like city yards. There's a fee. You need to pre-register. It happens at Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707 for more information. And Art in Bloom, March 21st through the 24th. Over 50 floral masterpieces interpreting art in the museum's collection, workshops, and special events. This happens at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh. And now from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. Here's some garden folklore for you. Many gardeners, like Mary Dempster of Garnavillo, Iowa, hold to the widespread custom of planting potatoes on Good Friday. Ask any of its practitioners why they do this, and they'll tell you it's tradition. Their parents and grandparents always planted on that day. I never heard of any religious significance, says Sister Arita Dopkins, chair of religious studies at Viterbo College. Professor Dopkins suspects the custom has links to moon phase planting traditions. Easter is always the first Sunday after the first full moon of the spring, 2 days following Good Friday. Therefore, your potatoes just get settled in when the moon starts to decrease, the theologian notes. My dad did it, too. He even dug under the snow to plant. You plant root crops in the dark of the moon when it's decreasing. You plant above-ground crops when the moon is increasing, she says. Plant all underground root crops, like potatoes, on a dark night when there is no moon, advocates one of Keysville, Virginia's most fabulous gardeners, Manuel Lax. Author's note, scientists have documented that some flowering plants, such as sweet peas, need a period of total darkness to blossom. If they start setting buds during the lunar dark phase, the moonless nights trigger the hormones needed to bloom. But if the plants mature during the full moon, the moonlight delays flowering. Potatoes and other vegetable crops may respond similarly to the influence of moonlight. Many folks hold that the moon phase influences harvesting as well as planting. If you want your potatoes to keep well, dig them only when the moon phase is on the decrease, Manuel recommends. As a matter of fact, the Virginia gardener plants his whole vegetable garden strictly by the moon. He sows corn only after the full moon, when it's on the wane. Green beans go in right after the change to the new moon in the waxing phase. Author's note. Do you suppose that's how wax beans got their name? Never, never prune a tree in a full moon or even when it's three quarters full, admonishes Ricardo Barrero, a San Francisco, California resident, originally from Colombia, South America. At home, Ricardo says, people believe that the sap is all through the tree at that time. If you trim, you bleed out its strength, and the tree will lose power. You should cut in the new moon, or when the moon is in the decline. In Colombia, wood for timber, furniture making, and export is never cut in a full moon because the fibers are open The timber is more susceptible to termites, and insects can enter the tree. Author's note. I'm told that commercial walnut growers in Iowa prefer to cut their timber in winter before the sap has risen, believing that the wood is of better quality at that time. And the word phenology sounds like something one might study as a philosophy or theology major, but it's only the scientific word for the common homespun practice of using natural signals for planting, pruning, and harvesting. Though Jennifer Kahn of Syracuse, New York, has a degree in natural resources and has worked in horticulture and botany, she still relies upon some old-time gardening lore learned from her mom and grandma. When forsythia blooms, that's the time to prune your roses, she says. When lilacs are blooming, adds Jennifer, it's time to fertilize the lawn. And when oak leaves are the size of a mouse's ear, it's time to sow your corn, Jennifer concludes. Similarly, retired University of Wisconsin Extension agricultural agent Jim Ness of Onalaska, Wisconsin, recalls that the old-time farmers used to believe that the proper time to plant corn is when the leaves of the white oak are as large as a squirrel's ear. Author's note. Where I live, we watch the growth of the oak leaves to signal that it's time to hunt morel mushrooms, generally about Mother's Day weekends. And nearly every child knows who Jack Frost is, but many a person grows up without ever having heard of Iceman. For Jeanette Mansk, the Icemen are as real as old Jack. The isolated farm in Chipmunk Coulee, Stoddard, Wisconsin, that Jeanette has lived in all her life, had no electricity or even any road in her childhood 60 years ago. Although much has changed over the years, Jeanette believes that the old garden wisdom she learned still holds true. Be alert for the Icemen, says Jeanette. They like to visit in the spring, around the time of the full moon in May. So listen to the weather forecasts and be prepared to cover vulnerable plants such as tulips and bleeding hearts, which may be blooming then. Author's note, folklore can also help you predict the arrival of Jack Frost in fall. According to my farmer neighbors, at the first thunderstorm of the year, count 6 months ahead. You can expect frost at the full moon following that date. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.